Hello, Divine Ones. This is Minister Ashley for the Awakened Podcast. In this episode, I sit down with a truth seeker, an anointed modern prophet known to the world as a Christian mystic, teacher, leader, and spiritual hip-hop artist. As to date, he has almost 4 million views on YouTube and over 300,000 streams in 132 countries on Spotify. On his platform, he has featured guests such as Jordan Maxwell, Brian Head Welch of the popular hit band Korn, mainstream actress Dee Wallace, and the great Santos Bonicelli, just to name a few. And he is the cover story of our first edition of the Awakened magazine. To get your free copy, follow the link in the description box. Without any further delays, I welcome Truth Seeker. All right, so to start off with, my first question is regarding your name, the Truth Seeker. I know it is indicated in your name, but I wanted to hear the story behind your name.
Yeah, so when I started doing gospel rap back in, 2003, I think it was, everybody had cool names, the group that I was with, and everybody had names like The Messenger, Third Prophet, Young Sick, Young Holy. Like, everybody had these cool biblical names and stuff, and I didn't have a name at the time. So I knew I needed a name, and it was between two names that stuck out to me. One was D-Lo in 2003. Lord, forgive me, and thank you for not choosing that name. Or Truth Seeker. It was, what I was from an early age, but also I seen it on a POD hoodie that the band POD, which I was really into at the time, was wearing Truth Seeker, a hoodie that just said Truth Seeker on it. I was like, man, that's what I am, a Truth Seeker. So I started going by that for the rap name. I told the crew, I was like, yeah, here's the two names. And they were like, yeah, definitely take Truth Seeker. So kind of went by that name with the ER. And because of the way I would introduce myself and just my the way I pronounce words, it was never a Truth Seeker with a hard ER, always with an A or an AH, Truth Seeker. Probably just a few months, I quickly took the ER off and put the AH on it, and been Truth Seeker ever since. And it stuck with me, and I feel like I've been that, but also grown into the name as far as introducing myself, signing autographs, and calling myself that. It means one thing at one level, and then the deeper you get into it, it's, truths behind what? Jesus is the truth. You found the truth. Why are you still seeking it? Is what people would say. But what about the truth of who we are, the truth of how the universe operates, how our bodies and minds work, the spiritual process? So obviously it blossomed and unfolded into what it is today.
Great. And that leads me to my next question. How important do you think names are? And do you feel they have or play a significant role in a person's life?
I do. The names that our parents gave us, I think, are what's, written on a contract, on a birth certificate. When we pass through the waters, through the birth canal, streams of consciousness into this realm, we've been called that from our mother's womb. And if you're not that, you grow into it. So it's what we've become. So I think that the names we're given from birth are play a huge role about our life and what we're supposed to be doing. And so, interestingly enough, I, just started feeling comfortable using my name in, the media and the teachings and stuff that I put out. I didn't know what it meant, but that's why you come up with Truth Seeker or Truth Seeker. It sounds better versus growing into your name and finding out the meaning kind of thing. So yeah, it's huge for me, especially reading the Bible. Like, you see that from Genesis to Revelation, the names of people were significant, the names of cities, the names of families, where they came from, who they were, and it described who those people were. So not just our names that our parents give us, but also the cities that we hail from, the countries, the states, all of that, I think plays a huge role in our life's purpose and why we're here. I don't think, but it's to study the etymology as you do. You know, nothing means what we think it means at face value. Most of these words, we have no idea meaning of America or China or Puerto Rico, mm-hmm. or something like that. And so those, and that's what our names are. We don't understand the meanings of our names either. You know, I'm just called Derek. You're just called Ashley. You just have these different names and they don't mean anything because they've become common to you. And so you want a new name, you want a different name until you figure out mm-hmm. what name means and you see how it plays a huge role in your life. Some people know that from an early age. I'll say that, you know, some parents are deliberate when they name their child something, gift of God, he who is like Jah, you know, all of these beautiful names, or a stricken name that they didn't know what it meant. So I think that all of that plays a huge role in who we are and what we're doing here.
Everything that you said, pretty much, I totally agree with, because I never really felt comfortable with my name until like last year. Like I really, really embodied my name. My first name, like how you said, is Ashley. And something just out of the blue was like, go look up your name. Go look up what Ashley means. And, you know, it wasn't so much what my name means, Ashley, but I was led to look up ash tree and the ash tree and how powerful the ash tree is. It is related to magic, which I, you know, love magic, divination and all of that. And it has like healing properties and powers. I was drawn to Ashe, although Ashley isn't necessarily Ashe, but Ashe in some of the African traditions is like a completion. It's like the spark is power. And that really gave me a fresh view of my name, and I really embodied my name. Because before, people would say like Ashtray or Ashley, you know, it's so very common. And being that we don't really think about names as much, like how you say it becomes very common, we can just think that we're very common. I will always wonder why my mother named me that, besides like her favorite TV show star or whatever. But you know, it definitely does have power. And you mentioned about names of locations. That's very important too, because I'm pretty sure that, like you mentioned, Puerto Rico, Puerto, I guess it's like a door. It could be, I guess that's what it means. I'm not exactly for sure, but you know, it could be a doorway or something.
Yeah.
It really works out if we take the time to really research, because we'll be surprised about how powerful we already are. We just was overlooking it because we aren't taught to, you know, dig deep.
It was common or unclean. So Ashley was the name of actress or celebrity that your mom named you after?
Yeah, from her favorite soap opera at that time. I don't know what that soap opera was, but yeah, that's what she told me, that that was her favorite character. Like she was a doctor or something.
Nice. Days of Our Lives. It's funny because my mom wanted to name me after her favorite star, if you will. And I think that's significant too, naming them after stars, Sylvester Stallone. And that would have been my name, Sylvester. But my dad spoke up and said, name shall be called Derek. So.
And what does Derek mean?
It means a way, a path, or the way, follower of the way.
I feel like you embody that name, showing people the way, not necessarily telling them how to think, but showing them a different way of how to think and how to dissect the scriptures and leading them down multiple paths so they can, you know, decipher which one is right for them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the main things that I picked up on when I started to engage with your content. I don't know how many years it has been since I first seen one of your videos, and I don't really remember where it started because it's been so long and I've been so immersed in your content. And I thank you so much for being such a bright light, a star unto the community and lighting the path for many of us.
Likewise.
Thank you. You are an inspiration along with many other people. I wanted to ask you, would you mind sharing a little bit about your testimony?
Yeah. I would say that I was interested in spiritual things from an early age, from having experiences at an early age, sleep paralysis experiences when I was like 3 years old, 3 or 4 years old. I remember it vividly, waking up in the middle of the night and beings being in my room, pinning me down to the bed. And I could see them. There were these shadows that were darker than the darkness that was in the room. Felt them on me. And again, I was just a toddler, but it, you know, that would leave an impression with you, you know? And so as growing up, I led me to ask deeper questions, you know, being around campfires and sleepovers with cousins and stuff and telling ghost stories. And I would find ways to weave that experience in to see if other people had had it. Have you guys ever waken up in the middle of the night with a little man in your room? And eventually, if you start asking enough people, you'll start hearing other people's stories. Oh my God, yes, I woke up and this little guy just ran. I looked at him and he saw me and ran out. And oh yeah, my dad had it happen. And wow. So, I mean, at an early age, you know, it's forming your path, you know, your way of asking bigger questions and trying to figure out, hey, what the heck was that? So asking those deeper questions, seeking truth at an early age. But that also led me to get involved in, I would say, witchcraft at an early age, as an adolescent, misguided teen, seeking power, seeking the supernatural. And I, you know, my first introduction was the low hanging fruit, which was, you know, I was hurt, you know, I was misguided and misdirected. And somebody spiritually, somebody gave me a gun. You know, you give this hurt young child a gun and don't show them how to use it. In a sense, that's all of us. We all have this magic, if you will. But it was to really contact and invoke and learn about spirits. So I started doing that at a young age. I mean, I was like, you know, I was intrigued at like, you know, 10, 11. And, but then started getting into it at 13, 14, getting into the darker stuff and practicing it and learning under a warlock who knew a lot of stuff and actually had supernatural power to create entities, to manifest entities, command them, and so much so that you could see them. And that was the thing that I saw then. And I'll be honest with you, I haven't seen that same power since. And it lit something in me to go deeper, to know that, hey, this stuff isn't just what's in the movies. Like, this is real. I've seen entities that someone invoked that have the ability to show up and threaten people and scare people. And that drew me even more. And so I dove in again, still this, you know, youth who was into gang activity and stealing and, you know, just had unresolved issues, confused about my identity. And I'm trying to contact and invoke spirits, but also, you know, robbing, stealing, cheating, lying, all of that stuff. So when I finally made contact, if you will, it was with the low-hanging fruit of the negative entities. Even trying to contact what I thought to be angels, I really did it all. Tapped into all of them to see which one would work, because I would find different books and I had all the books. None of them would work. And it wasn't until a certain period that I felt like they all worked at the same time. And some kind of portal opened up in my mind and in my home where these spirits would pull me in and out of some kind of a trance at will. And I would just shut down and be pulled into a trance mid-conversation. Couldn't turn it off or on, couldn't stop it, couldn't get out of it. And it was terrifying. I would stop breathing, turn pale, and my heart would start racing and I'd start sweating. Mid-conversation, sitting next to my girlfriend at the time, talking, and then just go into this trance. And then the stuff I was seeing was this, you know, torments and all types of like colors and shapes and faces and all trying to talk to me at the same time, you know? So I like blew open that door that I wasn't supposed to, you know, be looking into at that moment. You know, I was trying to force it open, and I did. I got to see what was on the other side that was conducive to the life that I was living. So that, you know, opened up a gateway of like a lot of just crazy bad stuff happening in my life. My health started to go down really quick, coughing up blood every day, seeing the spirits running through the house, having them talk to me through other people, knowing psychic abilities times 1,000. It birthed like schizophrenia in me. And I think it was 16 when that happened. And, but I was like, I was going to have to go to a mental institution or something. And that was just it, doing witchcraft and like it. I wasn't like on hardcore drugs or anything like that. So, I had been a Christian a few years before that. I went down that dark path. And I remembered the peace and the bliss and the love and grace of God that I had encountered being a Christian. So I knew that at my lowest moment, there was still hope. Like in my darkest hour, there was a time in my life where I had peace and I wanted that back in my life. And so I knew that that's what I had to do, is to call out to God and ask him to forgive me and repent. And I did. Just after these bad spells and stuff, these trances kept happening. And one night, just after having a bad spell, I got my girlfriend, who's now my wife, mind you, she was with me this whole time going through this stuff and still is. I got her to pray with me. She didn't believe in God or whatever, but I was just having a very bad time. She prayed with me that I'd feel better. Ended up going to sleep, waking up the next morning and just getting rid of everything, like all my paraphernalia, all my books, like all that stuff. And then just doing a 180, going back to where I knew the last time I had peace in my life was with Christ. So doing that September 7th of 2000, I've been on this walk or journey or this road ever since. So it was quickly to renounce all of that stuff as demonic. I couldn't be around, you know, music. I couldn't be around incense. I couldn't be around certain people. I couldn't smell alcohol or weed in the atmosphere. It would trigger me. Like there was just PTSD because like I scarcely made it out. And so that lasted, you know, for I guess maybe a year or so of like just getting my mind renewed. And because it was hard, it wasn't easy. Like those demons didn't want to let go. Like I was still dealing with stuff coming through Christ, like waking up in the middle of the night with them choking me out or reaching in my brain and grabbing my brain. And I'm just like, yeah, there was a lot of attacks and stuff trying to come out of it. But yeah, that was September 7th of 2000. I made that decision. But God had a way of like bringing all of it full circle. You know, there was an interest and an intrigue. And, you know, you go through things for a reason. You know, you grow through what you go through. So I was able, like Paul, be able to use a lot of my knowledge about the spirit world and spirit realm, the dark side first, to persecute people and hurt people, to be able to, God didn't throw that away. He used it for his glory and for my good. And
right.
And he's still doing it. So showed me that all of that was in the Bible, you know, psychic abilities and that kind of stuff, but just under a different name.
Yeah, you were saying about Apostle Paul and the similarities between you two.
Just to see how he started out using magic, if you will, or spiritual abilities for evil, or the purpose that they were created for, the against the reason God has given such powers. He was using it to hurt people and to you know, using magic and the craft, if you will, the wrong way. And he learned a lesson and he repented, you know, but God didn't delete that. God didn't say, hey, don't never do that again. That was stupid. No, he used his knowledge. He used his study, his intellect. He's like, man, if we can have influence and power on the earth, like we need to use this guy knows it all. Like he's operating in this. So what if he was operating in his magic, but for the kingdom, but to help people, you know, to help those who are oppressed instead of oppressing people. And that's Paul's story. From Saul to Paul, he converted. And then, you know, he was like, where's the greatest magician in your town? I bet you I'm better than him, and I'm going to teach him a lesson, the same lesson that I learned from Christ. I'm going to teach him, you know, I want to show you guys what real power is and what real authority is. And that was through this, I would say, relationship with the Christ, you know, and using it the right way.
Thank you for sharing your testimony. And I think there's also beautiful too with your then girlfriend, but now she is your wife, and you guys are pretty much doing ministry together.
Doing good things. Yeah. The Lord's in our relationship.
You started your ministry. Did it start off with both of you, or was it just you? And then she joined in your ministry later.
Mm-hmm. You know, she's always been, you know, supportive and with me in any and everywhere I go, you know, with my studies and religion. I mean, so she's always been there. But I think after, you know, of being the truth seeker, if you will, like, we look into a lot of different things and we're taught from a lot of different places. We want to immerse ourselves in things. And I think she got burnt out, you know, like doing it once, twice, three, four, five, six times of like, hey, what do we believe? Hey, what we're doing Christmas or no? You know, like, are we Hebrews? Like, what are we in this pursuit? I think it, you know, she got burnt out doing that, and it was my fault. So she still supported me in my study and in our home and stuff like that. But as far as like, you know, diving in, you know, I think I kind of lost some of that respect, if you will, which a lot of people go through. So it came full circle. I'll say that she's always been there to support me, and I'm able to do what I do because of her partnering with me, being my wife and being so supportive. And she had different visions and different dreams that she was called to do. So she had her own ministry. The feeling was mutual. I had to support her in what she was doing, even though they were two different things. But it wasn't until recently that, you know, she's felt called to step down from her passion. You know, it's her job. She does it for a living, but it's her dream job. She works with horses and disabled children, and what she's doing is so amazing. And she's just called and led to put that down to really step into the ministry aspect, full time with me, doing it that way. So, it's very exciting. You know, we've been, you know, together for a long time, and it was, when the Lord was, you know, ready, when it was ready for both of us to come together to create something brand new, with all of our experiences that she had to go learn and she had to do there, that I had to learn and do, with ministry and music and stuff like that. So now to come together to, use our knowledge for the kingdom. So I'm excited, and she is, and, you know, about what God's doing right now. But this is all new to us too, to have her on camera, to have her in interviews with me, you know, helping me with my schedule, like all this stuff. She's, you know, there in every step of the way.
And I think it's also a very amazing connection that you can grow spiritually and your partner will still be there to support you regardless. Like, I think that sometimes that may be missing in some people's relationship is the fact that regardless of, like, let's say that they start off with one religion or they start off with no religion, and then one partner wants to experiment or explore, that can draw or put a wedge in between the two. But with you guys seem to grow closer through these different, some would say challenges or growth spurts, I would say, that you guys still found power and strength and connection in those different cycles of life. And I think that's beautiful. That's, you know, a rare thing that happens with people, especially with couples and even with friends and family. You know, not everybody is going to stick with you when you're going through different spiritual awakenings. Mm-hmm. And it's all for the benefit of the kingdom, though. It really is. Yeah. Regardless of what title you may have or what tradition, it is all for the kingdom if you're operating out of the love of Christ, in love in general.
Yeah. A lot of people's stories, it was our story, or it is our story. I kind of felt like I was in that boat a little bit, and she felt the same way. But there's so many people that I counsel and talk to who are in similar relationships where, you know, awakening doesn't happen like at the same time for everybody. And so it does seem rare for the people to go through these changes and stick together, because it seems like, you know, an excuse to leave. You know, there's a lot of people who leave their spouses because they're not spiritual enough, you know, that they're not, oh, we just, you know, we're growing apart. You know, there's all of these different excuses that you can bring to the table to take the easy way out. And a lot of Christians do that, not just with spouses, but with people, with ministries, with the, you know, discipling people. Like, we're quickly on to the next one versus growing with that person. And, you know, the fruit of the Spirit is long suffering, to suffer long with somebody and not get weary and well doing. So it's a pattern that I've seen in many people's lives and in many people's ministries. I've been able to identify it and try my best not to repeat it, you know, because it is the low hanging fruit. It is the easy way out. And being able to see it, now you're able to adjust your mind and your heart to try not to make that same mistake that you're able to see other people making, or the mistake that my father, you know, made walking out and leaving my mom. You know, I see a lot of ministers doing that, and I'm against it. I come from a single mother household, and I'm against it. And then you have all of these adversities and these things that you're judging all these other people going through. And then you're going through it. You're going through this place of, you feel like you're unequally yoked, and all of these things that not only the enemy tells you, but people tell you. Like, people become the voice of that enemy saying, oh yeah, y'all aren't the same. You're more spiritual than your wife and all of this stuff, you know? And people tell you what you want to hear. And if it's in you and you haven't dealt with it, you'll believe it and it'll become your truth. And you'll quickly give that wife away and go get a new one, or that husband away. And trust me, this is happening. One thing I've seen in common with most of these online ministers, they got one thing in common, is divorce. That's the one thing they have in common. They've all been divorced. They've all given up their spouse to get the new spiritual one in the church that was a secretary, that was the nanny, all of this stuff. So if you know that that's coming, like, position yourself. Maybe they don't know what's coming. So I don't want to be the exception. I want to be the standard.
Well said.
Not easy, but it's a reward in
it's it. Not. Yeah, it is. And like, I think about when people enter into the contract of marriage, or even just a relationship. I think a lot of times, especially when it comes to marriage, that people romanticize it and they're not really seeking after the spiritual gifts. You get what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. It's, they look good. Okay. Do they go to church, or do they meditate, or, you know, like all these little boxes, yeah. But are they really seeking the Spirit of God and seeking the truth that may come, like, oh yeah, this is the person that you are equally yoked with, meaning that spiritually you are equally yoked, and it will manifest in a tangible sense. Because sometimes it may not seem on the surface that you are spiritually yoked. That's why it's spiritual yoke. You know, it's not because, oh, we look good together, or, you know, oh, we say the same, we finish each other's sentences, or we think somewhat the same. That is all physical manifestations or expectations, or sometimes we can make it seem like that's the reason for compatibility, but that may not necessarily be the case. We have to first have that relationship, that connection with the divine source, with God, to know who is our spiritual partner.
Yeah.
And I also personally do believe that, you know, some people may not necessarily be meant to enter into marriage. Sometimes people may just be like how Apostle Paul was, just single, you know, and that can be okay. That's okay.
Yeah.
You don't have to try to.
You're not just responsible for yourself anymore. Now you're responsible for
yeah.
another person, and maybe kids that
a family. Yeah.
Doing ministry and have kids and have to balance, and it's not easy, but great is thy reward.
Yeah. And I as well come from a single parent household. My mother, it's a lot that goes with that. It's a whole lot. And I've grown and matured quite a bit to be able to accept the things that I have grown through. At first, it used to be like a blockage or a hindrance or why this, why that. But I know that that is part of my spiritual journey. And it helps to give me a different perspective with people and connect to them in a different way. I feel like that, you know, although we may have had both, like, for example, for a person that has had both parents, it doesn't necessarily mean if I had both parents that I would have turned out the same way or I would have turned out better. You know,
yeah,
it's just God allowed it to happen a certain way. So therefore, that is part of my spiritual path. I can't compare myself to other people. And that has really helped me a lot because it was difficult at times. It was. I'm not going to front, you know, but it's all part of my testimony. And I'm grateful for it.
Yeah, it's good being able to look back and redeem the time where you can, you know, God was setting you up like to create something in you that it can only come forth this way, to go through these certain trials and tribulations, and that character and that compassion and that empathy, it's now a badge of honor that you are, you know, sympathetic, empathetic about certain situations, marriage, you know, sticking around, like even when it's reasons, there may be reasons to get divorced or whatever the case is, but you like, nah, this is children up. Like, this is a curse. Like, what I went through, I never want that on anybody. So just, and so people find ways to justify what's in them. So you have to, we all do. So you have to be aware of it. So I think the biggest thing to do is to look at the good in it. Like with a relationship that is tried and shaken, there are going to be everything. The Bible says everything that can be will be shaken. Let it shake. If it's meant to fall, let it fall. But if it's built on love, beauty, and truth, it remains forever. So, you know, if you were in love with somebody, you grew apart, you can grow back together, and it's on you. Look at the good in it versus looking at the bad, and do that with a marriage.
Yeah.
The spouse doesn't see eye to eye, or they're not experiencing the spirituality that you are. It doesn't happen at the same time. So, but look at the good in it. They're able to balance you out while you're traveling to heaven.
Yeah.
From the, you know, whoever, you know, the saints or whatever, God, and still be able to pay bills and do what it takes to be here in the flesh. Like, you got to be able to look at the good in it, just like coming from a single parent household. I'm able to look at the good at it of growing up without a father. It's so much bad. And the first half of our lives, the adolescence, is we only could see the bad. But then as you grow up and you ascend and you're able to see things from a heightened point of view, I could see how God worked all that out, how God had a blessing that he wanted to be my father. And he taught me something that folks who grew up with a father in their household will never get. Like to that degree, they know it to their degree. So let's get that straight. But as far as I don't know what it's like to have a male role model, that's where Jesus comes in. That's where Paul comes in. That's where God comes in spiritually. And then he gets to interact with me through other people that he sends into my life to, you know, to show things, or sending me to certain jobs or whatever, that I go to work where they got to teach me how to be a man or use a shovel or change the oil or change a tire that I didn't get, that most people get from their father. I had to learn, you know, through different jobs and stuff, but I can salute God and be like, man, he's everything that I need. He's made sure that I've gotten it one way or the other. That's my father who did that. It wasn't me. It wasn't, you know, to be able to look back at those things you thought was a blessing that tried to kill you and take you out. Now it's a, you saw it's a curse. It's really a blessing. You say it's a blessing, but you have to be the one to see it.
Exactly. It's like alchemy, spiritual alchemy.
Yeah.
What was painful, what was hurtful, what was holding me back or holding us back, that we were able through the power of Christ to transmute it. And now it's it's part of our journey. We own it. We embody it. We overcame it, and we turned it into our power, our greatest tool, our greatest weapon against whatever may be holding us back in the current moment. And it also serves as a light, a beacon of light unto others that may be in similar situations. We sometimes do not go through things, actually the great design of God. We do not go through things by accident. It's because we are all interconnected. I may have went through certain things that I'm able to be a beacon and a light, whether interpersonally or across the world or years down the line, that someone else can resonate with, and that will give them inspiration and hope. You know, I just love the way how God works everything together. You can see the pattern and the motif throughout life. We back up and take ourselves out of just the situation and look at how God just works and makes everything come together. Yeah, that's powerful.
Doing and I love tracing that back. It doesn't end.
He's continuing
to do it.
It doesn't.
In millions of ways that are multidimensional even. So
back to your music. How has music played a part in your life?
So many different ways. As being a form of escape as a teenager, take you to a different place, a different world, to live different lives through people, through cultures, through that kind of thing, the feeling like for the moment that you're listening to it, that nothing else exists, no other problems exist, that kind of thing from an early age. And then being able to create music and do music that has the ability to do that for others, that has the ability to take them to a place where their problems don't exist, where hope abounds, where beauty and mystery and majesty is imparted, you know. So it's very powerful, very spiritual, but also, you know, music as a modality of worship, you know, to honor God and to sing to God or to sing about God through music is something that brings joy to us. And it still is a place of escape, like God's presence or whatever, thinking about him or, you know, God just in general, because let me get that straight. I know we say him, but it's him and her. So most people would know what we mean by that, but some don't. So God is all experienced through any and every modality has been such a blessing. And again, to be able to create worship music that does that, to create music that makes you think, music that describes angelic experiences and stuff like that, that I've had to share poetically. Other people are kind of like initiated in that modality if they're ready. And that's been cool to see too, to just sprinkle it through the music and to see how it affects people differently. Cause some people, it's one of those things where like, either love it or hate it, man, turn that off. Or like, wow, this is really powerful. I can't stop listening. And those are experiences that I've had with music, you know, that I know creating, I can embed in my music, that is going to be the soundtrack of somebody's spiritual awakening. That's the advice. I'm just trying to do it daily and trying not to, you know, and I would say speak, you know, negativity or whatever the case is, but it's just what we do. We learn to roll with the punches and do the best we can and give God the glory in the midst of all of it.
Yeah.
Not easy.
And it's definitely not easy. I know. I used to beat myself up when I would make a mistake. Like if I set a goal, oh, I'm not going to do this again. I used to beat myself up. And then I found myself in a cycle of repeating over and over again. And knowing that when we may fall or we may stumble, that is still part of our journey. You know, we still can build in strength. We still can overcome it. When we take the time and the energy and really wallow in that regret, that we're not really helping ourselves to overcome the situation. Sometimes, you know, we may need it. Based off the chemicals in our brain, when we're used to doing something, our body may crave that emotional response. So if you do happen to stumble and fall, try your hardest and your best to quickly snap out of at least the emotional state of it. And as you continue to build in that strength and that energy and that momentum, you'll be able to overcome whatever the situation is. And just one last thing, just tell people how they can reach out to you, how they can follow you. listen to your music, your podcast.
Yeah. Again, thanks for having me on. I love what you're doing and your work and challenging people and teaching them at the same time and separating the wheat from the, you know, tares or whatever, just by asking questions and sharing little triggers and stuff. It works. It works so good. And we learn from the best, right? Jesus did it the same way. So
yeah, right. Thank you.
Yeah. So they can go to my website. They want to check out anything that I'm doing, my podcast, my music, my meditations. We have a Seer School, which is online community. All of that can be accessed and seen at truthseeker.com. So truth, SEEKAH.com. All my stuff's there. And I'm on all the social media platforms as well.
Thank you guys for tuning in to this episode of the Awakened Podcast. For your free digital copy of the Awakened magazine, check the description box. If you're interested in submitting an article or to be featured in our magazine, visit our website at www.awakenedmagazine.online. A quick announcement. On May 23rd, on the Sagittarius full moon, the book is dropping. Yes, that's right. The book is officially dropping, entitled The Bible's Hidden Divination and Magic. This book is 263 pages. Both the ebook and the hard copy will be available for purchase. So don't forget to mark your calendars for May 23rd. That link will also be located in the description box. Like, share, and subscribe. And don't forget to leave a comment. Check out Truth Seekers platforms, and I will talk to you guys on the next episode.